Now, the first presidential debate took place last night in Cleveland. For 90 minutes with no breaks or commercials, President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee former Vice President Joe Biden responded to half a dozen or so topics and questions from Fox News Sunday anchor Chris Wallace. In case you missed it, here's a bit of what much of the evening sounded like with Wallace attempting to direct a question at Trump.
Over the last 4 years, you have promised to repeal and replace Obamacare, but you have never in these 4 years come up with a plan, a comprehensive plan to replace Obamacare.
Of course I have.
Well, I'll give you an
opportunity.
And when I finish, mandate. I'm going to give you an
Excuse
opportunity.
Excuse me. I got rid of the individual mandate, which was a big chunk of
Obamacare.
That is absolutely a big thing. That was the worst part of Obamacare. Chris, that was the worst part of Obamacare.
Let me ask my question.
Well, I'll ask Joe.
The individual
mandate was the most unpopular aspect of Obamacare. I got rid of it.
I'd like
and we will protect people with
pre-existing conditions. President, I'm the moderator of this debate. And I would like you to let me ask my question, and then you can answer your question.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Did you watch or listen to the event last night? What were your reactions and thoughts? Do you think there was a clear winner, if you think about debates in that way? Did either candidate win you over if you were one of the few undecided voters leading up to the event? Call 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more debates? The remaining scheduled two. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. It's the week in Washington. We'll look at a couple of the top stories in national political news, including that debate. Reed Wilson is a national correspondent for The Hill. Reed, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me again.
So my first question, Reed, is can we talk about last night's debate in the way that we in the media usually talk about presidential debates? This one was different.
Well, you know, we could just spend the next 10 minutes talking over each other.
Let's
do it. To sort of reimagine what last night really was. This debate last night is making people rethink the basic ground rules of how a debate operates. We've even heard the suggestion from the Commission on Presidential Debates today that they're going to consider new ways to control the two candidates. And to me, that sounds like giving the moderator a button to shut off one of their mics or something, which would be absolutely unprecedented. I mean, I'm old enough. I don't know how old you are, but I'm old enough to remember when Al Gore sighing loudly was seen as a huge sign of disrespect. And it was a multi-day story after one of his debates with George W. Bush. This is another level altogether. I mean, you had one candidate call the sitting president of the United States of America a fool and a clown, and then told him to shut up at one point. And that wasn't even the most out of control moment of the entire debate. So, yeah, if there were norms and guardrails before, they have now been fully cast aside.
So what do you take away from the event last night?
So I think President Trump missed an opportunity to change the race. Look, we can see from the surveys, whether it's the national polls or the surveys in Wisconsin or any of the other prime swing states, that President Trump is behind. He's losing this race by a not insubstantial margin in a lot of states. So he needed to use a moment when tens of millions, if not 100 million people, were tuning in to this debate to really change the focus of the contest, make this more about Joe Biden, and make this hit the reset button. He didn't do that last night. He made the contest about himself. He played to his base. I mean, there were times when you would have to be pretty steeped into the sort of Fox News, Breitbart worldview of right-wing media to understand what he was talking about with crooked Hillary and the emails and the hoax and all this stuff. I didn't see a lot of effort to expand the base, to change the trajectory of this race. And therefore, with four of these debates on tap, three presidentials and a vice presidential, President Trump missed one of the opportunities that he had to change the trajectory of the race. On the other hand, Joe Biden had a moment that showed why Democrats were enthusiastic about, showed the upside of Joe Biden. He looked into the camera. He spoke to the American people. At one point, he said something like, how many of you woke up this morning with an empty seat at your table because somebody had died of COVID-19? That sort of empathy and connecting with people has always been Joe Biden's strong suit. And he showed it at a moment when it proved a real contrast with President Trump.
Talking to Reed Wilson, national correspondent for The Hill. It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. We'll focus for a good chunk of the conversation on the presidential debate last night, and you can join in with your reactions. 800-642-1234, either to one of the candidates, both of them, to the debate itself. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go to Jeffrey with us now in De Pere. Jeffrey, hi.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I hope I don't really mess this up, but last night I did not watch the whole debate. I listened to it on captions through the cable television. And it was absolutely ridiculous, like a bully beating down another little kid tail stealing his lunch money. And the darndest thing is that we as American citizens over 244 years have allowed this to happen. And this isn't the first time, and it probably won't be the last time.
Jeffrey, thanks for the call. A lot of general expressions of disappointment and some shamefacedness from Americans on this. Do you think that Jeffrey's is a common reaction, Reed?
Yeah, I do. Granted, my worldview last night was through a combination of watching it on TV and checking my Twitter feed. But there were a lot of people who, respected columnist types who were starting to talk about not having the next couple of debates. And that's not something that you hear from people who spend their time covering sort of civic life in America. I think the other two debates and the vice presidential debate are going to continue. I think it's in each candidate's interest for them to continue. But the fact that people were questioning that, that says something about the level of discourse that we've seen. Now, it's not as if we should have expected a modern Lincoln Douglas debate from two candidates who very obviously despise each other at the deepest personal levels. But I suppose we could have hoped for better.
Thanks for that call, Jeffrey. Go to Deb now in Stevens Point. Deb, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was very disappointed with the way the debate went last night and equated our President Trump, his ability to allow others to speak at the conversation between two third graders fighting over something. And I feel I'm a former speech pathologist, and I feel anyone who had someone heckling verbally from the side would interfere with another's ability to think and get their thoughts together. I've already heard comments of Joe Biden possibly having Alzheimer's or dementia, and I think that that's totally unfair after last night's performance by our leader.
Deb, thanks for the call. And some people have talked about the run-up and the Trump campaign's framing of Joe Biden, questioning, as Deb suggested, some people were, his mental ability. And some people are warning that that might be a trap, that then all Joe Biden had to do was show up and, be coherent, and that might defeat that expectation. What do you make of that expectation game?
Yeah, the expectation game was played terribly by the Trump campaign. I mean, for months they've been questioning Joe Biden's mental acuity. They have not apparently paid attention to his two turns on the national debate stage, one against Sarah Palin, one against Paul Ryan back in 2012. And the fact that he just went through 11, maybe 12 primary debates, including the last one where he was one-on-one with Bernie Sanders, who's no weak debater himself. I talked to a couple of debating experts from colleges around the country last week, and one of them said to me, all Biden has to do is show up and say, noun, subject, verb, and he's cleared the bar that the Trump campaign has set for him. It was very clear that Donald Trump was, in fact, trying to rattle Vice President Biden, as Deb brought up, especially as he brought up Hunter Biden and the business relationships that Hunter Biden has built across the world. I was struck, though, by the way that Joe Biden not only avoided getting angry. I mean, the one time he showed sort of a flash of anger was when his other son, Beau Biden, the late Beau Biden, came up. But aside from that, he turned a very brutally personal attack on Hunter Biden and his struggles with drug addiction back to that empathy card that Biden is so good at playing. He talked about the fact that Hunter Biden had struggled with a drug addiction just like so many other Americans. And I thought that was a real moment when he took what could have been a gut punch that would have completely thrown him off his game and showed that,
it benefits somebody to have been on a national debate stage under these Klieg lights several times before.
We're talking to Reed Wilson, national correspondent from The Hill, looking at some of the top stories in national politics, mainly the debate. We'll touch on another issue or two toward the end of the conversation, including the latest on COVID-19. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions to last night's debate. We'll continue the conversation, hear from some more of you coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It's the week in Washington. We continue our talk with Reed Wilson, national correspondent for The Hill. Taking your calls right now on yesterday's debate at 800-642-1234. Lori is with us now in Stevens Point. Lori, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Lori?
Well, I did watch the debate, the whole debate, the entire debate survived. I was disappointed, but not surprised. I'm not surprised because the president behaved the same way when he was debating with Hillary, when he was debating in the primary with the Republicans back in 2015 and 16. So I'm not surprised at his behavior. I was glad that Biden maintained some composure the best that he could with all the ranting. But I wanted to say something. I'm a veteran. I'm over 50. And I served under a president that I did not vote for. And I think the patriotism and the division in the country is quite disappointing. And I was hopeful. I was hopeful for Trump when he was elected. I was hopeful that he would recognize the enormity of the position that he holds and really would be a uniter. And the fact that he did not denounce the hate groups, the Proud Boys, was extremely disappointing. That is a gut punch. And anybody who thinks that that's great or that, hey, he's telling it like it is or he's being a tough guy, look around you. If you don't support that, I just feel like you don't support the Constitution and what this what this country stands for.
Thanks a lot for the call, Lori. Reed, a lot there. Where do you want to go with it?
Well, I'm glad that Lori survived. Sorry, that made me chuckle a little bit the way she put that. But yeah, that was one of the moments that stood out to me the most. You know, President Trump has never been good at distancing himself from people who back him, no matter if they are simply objectionable or if they espouse views that truly run counter to sort of what we think of as modern America, including white supremacist groups and anti-Semitic groups like the Proud Boys. He cleaned it up a little bit this morning, in which, as he was on his way to Marine One to take off for a campaign rally, he said that he didn't really know who the Proud Boys were, and that's all that mattered. And of course, tried to turn it back on Joe Biden and Antifa. But this is something that is a bit of a pattern with President Trump. It doesn't matter who is praising him, so long as it's praise, he's going to accept it.
Thanks for calling in, Lori. Let's go to Rose now in Menominee Falls. Rose, hi.
Hi there. I listened to the whole thing. It was horrible. I would ask or propose for the next two debates that they have one evening with just Joe Biden and a town hall format, and the following debate night have Trump and a town hall format. It's very clear that these two are not going to be able to have a productive dialogue between the two of them. The moderator had almost no control over the situation. I think we would learn a lot more, and I think it would be more fair to the candidates to just have them be separate.
Thanks for the call. Reed, we have seen some of these town hall style things with either of the candidates. I think the next debate is supposed to be a town hall format. Is it worth thinking about a change of format at this late stage in the game?
Well, I don't think you're going to get the two campaigns to agree on that. I mean, these debates are set months in advance. People, the two sides hammer out every possible agreement that they could, from how far away the two are going to be to how they sit or stand, whether or not they're allowed notes. All these little details are to be negotiated in for months in advance. So I doubt that you'd see something like that. And frankly, I think it behooves both of the campaigns to stick with the plan that they have. And we see Joe Biden is able to leverage his skills as a debater, his experience on the debate stage, to look to contrast himself with what people see in President Trump. And on the other hand, you know, President Trump needs that one-on-one. He needs to make the case that both that he deserves another 4 years and that Joe Biden does not deserve 4 years in the Oval Office. So it is in both sides' best interest to continue the formats that we have now. As we go into the future, though, I mean, I love that idea. We've seen, you know, President Trump did a town hall meeting. I think it was on ABC a couple of weeks ago. Joe Biden did one on CNN a couple of weeks ago. In both cases, I like this idea of voters getting the chance to question their candidates. I think that should happen a lot more than it does. Now, a part of that reason it's not happening is because of the coronavirus, but another part is because the campaigns don't like that uncontrolled setting. And frankly, if we're electing a president, let's see how they act in uncontrolled settings.
Thanks a lot for all of your calls. It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. Reed Wilson is with us, national correspondent for The Hill in Washington. Reed, want to hit a couple other issues in just our last few minutes. I know you follow closely COVID-19, its progress at the state level. And unfortunately, I think your eyes are probably turning toward us here in Wisconsin right now. What are you watching from the national vantage point?
Yeah, I've been watching Wisconsin with sort of growing nervousness for the last couple of weeks. I mean, Wisconsin is becoming sort of a precursor to what we're likely to see in the rest of the country as more and more people stay indoors longer, as schools reopen, just as the weather turns colder. We've started to see the case counts rise. We've started to see the hospitalizations rise. I'm pretty worried about President Trump heading to Green Bay and La Crosse in the next couple of days, two counties that are in red zone counties. If you're going to the president's rallies, you know, please wear masks and take every possible step you can to stay safe. But, Wisconsin right now, I'm sorry to say, is becoming a sort of a precursor for what the rest of the country is likely to experience in just the next few months.
And what are you seeing at the national level? We're not seeing these daily briefings anymore. Does it seem like there's a priority from the Congress or the president with giving consistent messages on COVID, mask wearing and all that?
Well, so we're seeing consistent messages from most states and most governors who are offering this, you know, the pretty consistent CDC message: wear a mask, stay 6 feet away from people when you can, and be as well ventilated as possible. We're not seeing the urgency from Congress. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin have been talking in the last few days about putting together a new package of stimulus measures, but we haven't seen any details. We haven't seen any plans on paper, and that all tells me that they are miles apart on any kind of reform package or stimulus package, which sort of boggles the mind a little bit. I mean, the economy is suffering. People are out of work, in substantial numbers. And a president is seeking reelection. You would think that he would just be adding zeros to whatever bill that the House Democrats would pass and then force it through the Senate just weeks before an election. That hasn't happened. And the reason for that, I'm not entirely certain. But the fact is, we are not anywhere close to having some kind of agreement on a real bill, a real stimulus package.
In our last minute and a half or so, one thing that is happening in the Senate, the confirmation efforts for Judge Amy Coney Barrett, President Trump's nominee to fill the seat left open by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Where is this effort at right now, Reid?
So Judge Barrett is taking meetings with senators, mostly Republican senators at the moment. I haven't seen any Democrats who have agreed to sit down with her. The Democrats are treating Judge Barrett just as the Republicans did Judge Merrick Garland about 4 years ago, a little more than 4 years ago now, when the Republicans refused to meet with him, refused to hold hearings or hold a vote. The difference is that Republicans are now still the majority, of course, and therefore the Democrats not meeting with him, not meeting with Judge Barrett, isn't going to have the same impact. She is likely to come up for confirmation hearings. She's likely to come up for a vote. And I think Republicans are aiming to force through a confirmation vote before Election Day rather than after.
And briefly, Reid, so much going on. What are you watching for over the next week?
Well, I'm going to be watching the vice presidential debate coming up next. It's going to be a fascinating clash of two very experienced public presenters, if you will. You know, Vice President Mike Pence, a former radio host, Senator Kamala Harris, a former prosecutor, somebody who knows how to prosecute a case. That will be a much more respectful debate than what we saw last night, but it could be even more brutal as the two campaigns go after Vice President Biden and President Trump.
Reid, thanks again for joining us today.
You got it. Thanks for having me again.
Reed Wilson is a national correspondent for The Hill. We talked to him today for our weekly look at the latest news in national politics and focused on last night's first presidential debate.